Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks very much for joining us this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On this week's show, there's been a lot of time and attention spent over the past few years on building up the U.S. military's capabilities to fight and to defend in cyberspace. But this is not exactly a new business for the military. The Internet itself, after all, came from the predecessor to DARPA. And before there were cyber national mission teams, there were signal officers, intelligence officers, and electronic warfare officers. The Army has a new set of doctrine that tries to recognize the fact that those are all distinct disciplines, but they're also highly reliant on each other. Collectively, the Army calls it Cyber Electromagnetic Activities, or CEMA. Our guests this week are Colonel Jim Eckvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare at Army Headquarters, and Colonel Carmen Chickalese, the Army's Chief for Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations. They talked with me at the Pentagon about the Army's current thinking about where those two disciplines need to come into more alignment under that CEMA construct. Colonel Eckvall starts us off with a basic description of exactly what CEMA is.
Just recently, earlier this year, the Army published doctrine for cyber electromagnetic activities, which is what CEMA stands for. In essence, what the Army did is doctrinally linked together three very distinct capabilities, but at the same time, because they are so closely aligned with one another, in other words, to be successful in one, you really have to be successful in the other, and combine three things. And those three things that were combined were electronic warfare, cyberspace operations, and electromagnetic spectrum operations. So collectively, that is known as CEMA. You can conduct all of those by themselves, so you can conduct cyberspace operations without necessarily conducting electronic warfare, and you can do spectrum management operations without necessarily using that in the context of electronic warfare. But at the same time, all three of those are related, and to be successful in one, you need to be successful in the other. And so that's kind of how CEMA came about.
Mm-hmm. And to what extent would you say at this point that this is an Army-only concept or doctrine, and how much of this is joint or becoming joint?
It's kind of interesting, and that's a great question, because there is a lot of similarities in how the services view it, but they don't call it CEMA. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones that call it CEMA. And really, when you talk about electromagnetic spectrum management operations at the joint level, they typically don't include cyberspace in that discussion, although they certainly understand how they are related to one another. So whether you lump them all together and call it something like we do in the Army, or whether or not you separate them and yet you understand how they're interrelated to one another, in essence, we all view it the same way.
Mm-hmm. You said to be successful in one of these, you got to be successful in the others. Explain a little bit more why. What do you mean?
Well, I'll use cyberspace as a good example.
Sure.
Cyberspace is an interconnected group of processors and computers and networks that allow the exchange of information. Very simplistic. I know that's probably a simplistic overview, but that's one of the things that it does. Sometimes when you communicate over this network, you will sometimes turn your ones and zeros, which are how the digital cyberspace world works, and you may turn that into a signal that goes across the airwaves. And you've got to be able to protect and maintain and, in reality, have an advantage in the electromagnetic spectrum. So if I am dominating in the spectrum, or I have an advantage in the spectrum, therefore I can move freely. If you look at the spectrum as maneuver space, if I can move freely in there, prevent the enemy from influencing me, then I can conduct successful cyberspace operations.
Mm-hmm. I know it's early days, so it may be too early to answer this question, but as a practical matter, what are the beneficial effects that you've seen from combining all of these things into a single set of doctrine?
I would say that the most beneficial thing is an understanding of the interrelated nature of it all, and that in order to be successful in one, you must be successful in the other. So I know I'm just repeating what I just said, but I think that's a great benefit of what we have seen. And what this will also do is it will allow us to streamline a lot of the processes. So if we understand how they're interconnected, then we can begin to streamline how we educate our leaders, how we train our soldiers, and in some ways how we acquire materiel in order to successfully operate in these domains.
Mm. Colonel Chicklis, you want to handle that same question, benefits so far?
You know, the way I look at it is, if you look at the existent domains, land, sea, air, space, cyberspace, and you know what Colonel Leckvall was saying is that you need to be good in EW, or electronic warfare. You also need to be good in cyber. If you want to be good in land operations, you need to be able to call upon air operations, naval operations, as a synergistic means to bring all the capabilities to bear in that domain. So when I look at what we call the cyberspace domain, some might contend, and I'd probably be one of them, personal opinion to say that the electromagnetic spectrum is the bigger entity. But what cyberspace does is it gives a physical, something that you can touch and feel in electromagnetic spectrum, and it gives you global connectivity within the electromagnetic spectrum. So when you look at cyberspace and electronic warfare and electromagnetic spectrum operations as a holistic piece, then you're bringing all capabilities within that domain, or in this case, electromagnetic spectrum, to bear. So you're, by being able to bring all those capabilities, you're also aware of the inherent vulnerabilities, and you don't have separate operations with a degree of friction in them. So that's another perspective.
So not to get too metaphysical here, but even though cyberspace is a domain in joint doctrine, it's a man-made one. On the other hand, the spectrum is a physical thing with physical properties that you got to understand.
Sure. Let's go with that one a bit. And if you think about it, though, if you said to a commander, a tactical commander, 20 years ago even 10 years ago, the electromagnetic spectrum, well, what's that? Well, it's the airwaves, it's radio frequency, it's RF, very high frequencies, all these things you can't see. It's the radio emitting. But if I've got a radio emitting on the other side of the planet, I couldn't do anything about it. We've had these long-haul communications, whether it be under water sea cables or satellite connectivity across the globe. But now, because of cyberspace, and because more communications is riding over internet protocol, and those internet protocols have administrative channels and the like, now I can actually affect a very high frequency emitter on the other side of the planet because it's interconnected. So while there was a communication path before, I couldn't do anything about it. But now, because of internet protocol, I can. And you know, so from my perspective, cyberspace maybe is a little more tangible because I can go put my hands on a keyboard, on a computer, and it's not just radio waves passing in the air.
Right. So back to the concept of SEMA. I mean, I just want to be clear here that what the Army did is combine EW and cyber and spectrum management into a single set of doctrine. It did not say that cyber and EW are now the same thing.
Absolutely correct.
So talk from your perspective, differentiate those two things a little bit, and what concepts are important to keep separate in your mind as you think about the two things?
Well Colonel Leckvall alluded to that. When you talk about the zeros and ones, and maneuvering in cyberspace is about maneuvering with software amongst the seven application layers of the open source interconnected model, the OSI model, mm-hmm. and being able to do that. That's zeros and ones. It's keyboard strokes. It's code. And you're looking to stop adversaries from being able to penetrate your networks through the zeros and ones means. When you look at electronic warfare, the difference I see is the way you maneuver. Because now you don't need zeros and ones. You really need more of an understanding of just the way the spectrum operates. And now I'm going to kind of defer to Jim. He could probably help me out here and maybe explain that a little bit more.
Well, Carmen's exactly right. And I think what I would say is you get the ones and zeros aspects of how we do information dominance across the globe. One of the other things you've got to have, you have got to control the electromagnetic spectrum. And you have to control it different ways. You need to be able to attack inside of the electromagnetic spectrum. You must be able to defend inside of the electromagnetic spectrum. And you must be able to pass data, so you must be able to conduct electronic warfare support from all the systems out there that gather information from all the sensors that are across the width and the breadth of the battlefield. And then you've got to do all of this without causing inadvertent fratricide to your own systems. And all of those things combined is what gives a maneuver commander the ability to not only to gain that advantage in the electromagnetic spectrum, but then to maintain it. Because the enemy, of course, has just as much access, really, to the electromagnetic spectrum as you do. So we've got to be ahead of him, we've got to know the systems that he uses, and we need to be able to know how to defeat those systems. So although cyberspace operations is about, really, gaining and maintaining an advantage in those networks, gaining and maintaining that advantage inside of the systems that use those networks so we can communicate. The spectrum is about, electronic warfare is about that spectrum piece of it.
Mm-hmm. So if you are that maneuver commander out in the field and you want to achieve an effect on the battlefield, do you need to have a detailed understanding of whether you want to use EW, vice, cyber, or do you just have a SEMA guy that you can turn to and say, make this go?
Yeah, that's great. The direction that we are headed right now today is that we will have a SEMA cell in the various levels of organization on the battlefield. So you will turn, as a commander, you will turn to your SEMA cell, who at this point in time is the responsibility of the electronic warfare officer, although there's work to be done to see how we're going to do this in the future. But as it stands today, you turn to that electronic warfare officer and you say, this is the effect that I want to achieve. And that electronic warfare officer will bring the tools that are available to him or that he already has into the commander's scheme of maneuver to meet his intent.
That's Colonel Jim Ekvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare at Army Headquarters. Our other guest is Colonel Carmen Chickalese, his counterpart at the Pentagon for Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations. We'll come back and talk more about the convergence of those two fields within Army doctrine and within the workforce after a quick break. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. We're back on DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Thanks for joining us as we talk about the Army's approach to cyberspace operations, electronic warfare, the electromagnetic spectrum, where those topics align with one another and where they're still distinct disciplines, as the Army works through a new doctrine it calls Cyber Electromagnetic Activities, or SEMA. Our guests for this are Colonel Jim Ekvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare, and Colonel Carmen Chickalese, the Chief for Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations. Both of them work for the Army staff at the Pentagon. Before the break, Ekvall described the Army's basic vision for the workforce that will eventually make up a SEMA cell on the battlefield.
And so let's talk about what that workforce looks like. Are there specific individual MOSs that are EW folks and are cyber folks still? Are those coming into alignment in any way in terms of workforce?
So I'll take the first part of it, then I'll turn it back over to Carmen, and he can kind of wrap it up. So
sure.
If you look at this SEMA cell, there are three distinct groups of individuals. So you have electronic warfare individuals, you have electromagnetic spectrum individuals, and you have cyber individuals, and they're all professionals in their field. So electronic warfare is done by electronic warfare professionals who we collectively refer to as the 29 series. So we have warrant officers, we have non-commissioned officers, and we have commissioned officers that do the electronic warfare piece. We also have another career field in the Army known as 25 Echo, and those are our spectrum managers. Now, when it comes to cyberspace operations, this is evolving, and I'll kind of turn it over to Colonel Chickalese to let him talk through that.
So with regards to cyberspace operations, first I'll pick it up where Jim left off. In tactical formations, Corps and below, divisions, brigade combat teams and the like, we do not have cyberspace personnel. It is the responsibility of that 29 series, officers, NCOs, warrant officers, enlisted, to bring to bear those SEMA effects to include cyber. And that's done through a coordination process with higher headquarters. An understanding of what the capabilities are available. Right now, what the Army has is capability at the operational level, and that's those forces that we're building as part of the Cyber Mission Force to support Army Cyber and U.S. Cyber Command. So the military occupational specialties that we have are on the enlisted side, the 35 Quebec, which is out of the military intelligence community, and then out of the signals community, we have 25 Delta enlisted, and then the 255 Sierra warrant officers. So we have those MOSs, and that is currently, again, the focus of the build is building the cyber mission force and those teams to support Army Cyber. On the officer side, right now it's a blend of some 35 Golf signals intelligence officers out of the military intelligence. It could be, from the signal side, it could be a 24 series officer, a 53. And then there are other a potpourri of officers that if you have that skill and you've developed it, you might be working in that to include, for example, Functional Area 30 Information Operations. So it's fairly diverse right now. A couple things I think are worth noting is that the Secretary of the Army is considering whether or not to establish a cyber branch. I'm not going to get out in front of him, but sure. we'll keep monitoring to see what his decision will be on that. And then also, at the tactical level, the Chief of Staff of the Army has pushed and said, now we need to start considering what do we need at the tactical level, at core and below, and what is that going to look like. So that's really just in the nation stages, and that'll be at the Training and Doctrine Command to help develop in coordination with the rest of the organizations within the Army to lead that effort. But we'll see how that one goes as well.
Again, without getting out in front of Secretary McHugh, just for people who aren't familiar with the military personnel system, explain what creating a cyber branch would do. What would be the significance of that versus what you have now?
Well, what a branch should do, it does two things for you. One, it gives you an identity. It gives you a professional identity, and that's an important part of being the profession, and whether it's the profession of arms or cyber within the profession of arms. But the other part it does is it helps establish a guaranteed training and education and professional career path so that you have a way of moving throughout your career into growth positions and then ultimately leadership positions so that 20, 30 years from now, we'll have general officers and sergeant majors who came through a cyber track. And they will be truly steeped in cyber with regards to Army operations and, of course, joint operations because it is a joint game. And that professional track is really what helps build the profession of arms.
Versus working a few years in cyber and building up expertise and then getting siphoned off into another part of the Army.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly a gap I was missing, but that's what would occur otherwise. Is you go do something for a while, then you go and you're gone, and that expertise is doing something else.
Mm-hmm. So cyber operators and EWOs, I'm assuming, have got to have a good understanding of each other's professions. Otherwise, there wouldn't be much point in creating this new set of doctrine. But are they actually, does their work overlap? For example, are electronic warfare officers getting into things that we would have formerly described as cyber operations or vice versa? Or are they still very distinct pieces of work?
Well, what I would say is that they are... Certainly there is overlap. SEMA is overlap. So if you look at it and you look at electronic warfare, cyberspace operations, and electromagnetic spectrum operations in our doctrine, there's a nice little picture, which is a Venn diagram. Now, there's a large portion of it that is separate and distinct from one another. But if you don't understand the overlap and how one complements the other, then we would fall short. As our education of the new cyber workforce, if that is deemed the appropriate response, our electronic warfare professionals and our spectrum management professionals, their collective education will certainly inform one another of how the pieces fit together. One of the nice things that is coming from this discussion is the fact that at some point in the future, we believe, the Cyber Center of Excellence will be responsible for the training and education of that entire cyber workforce. So what you'll have is a streamlined approach to their program of instruction. Capabilities development integration piece that will bring all that education together to make sure that the programs of instruction are complementary to one another. I don't know if Carmen wants to add to that.
I think, of course, there's an overlap, and I think the overlap will start to occur in the middle of somebody's career. As you grow, you need to understand more and how this interoperability occurs and how you touch each other. And I'll call upon my own experiences as a basic branch signal officer, where I learned how to install, operate, and maintain signal communication so that the commander can execute his command and control. I was able to do those systems. And then we had other people that were very good at engineering the communication network, and they could fix, and I had other officers who could fix a switch or a patch system. I didn't have that skill. It took me longer to develop that. And then eventually I moved into computer networking. You got an advanced degree in telecommunications management, go to some of the Microsoft courses. Now suddenly I can not just install, operate, and maintain a communication system, but I can also do the same for the network, the computer, so that it can ride over that communication system. And then you start to add on security, information assurance, cybersecurity, those information assurance vulnerability alerts and patches and being able to fix that all takes time. Now, that's just my personal example, and there's probably other people can learn it all quicker. And I would say that, you know, today's soldier probably know more of it quicker because they've operated a computer. It wasn't something new to them, and they'll grow up with that. But what happens, I think people can only learn so fast. And as you move up from a tactical level and you start to hit the operational level, you start to get to those next levels, I can install, operate, and maintain a communication system. I can install, operate, and maintain the communications network. Now I have to learn to secure it. And now I've become a senior officer, maybe major now, or lieutenant colonel, and now I have to defend it. Well, because I know how the network operates, because I know how to secure it and install those information vulnerability patches, now I bring in other aspects of conducting an integrated defense, and I have to understand that where do I touch the electromagnetic spectrum? Where does this network convert to perhaps a wireless local area network? How do I use these other defensive capabilities? How do I anticipate and identify what it is my adversary is going to do? And that's a skill that develops over time. It's an operational skill. So to me, that's where the overlap is really going to occur the most. And it'll be interesting to see in upcoming generations how fast they can learn all of it. Hopefully it didn't take as long as I did.
Yeah. Colonel Carmen Chickalese is the Chief of Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations on the Army staff at the Pentagon. We're also talking with Colonel Jim Eckvall, the Army's Electronic Warfare Chief at the Pentagon, as we talk about the Army's concept of cyber electromagnetic activities, a sort of careful merger between those two disciplines. More with both of them after another quick break. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbian. Thanks for listening to On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia. We're talking about a new arena of Army doctrine called Cyber Electromagnetic Activities. It brings together three separate fields, managing the electromagnetic spectrum, plus what's historically been called electronic warfare and the relatively new concept of cyberspace operations. Our guests are both from the Army's G357 organization at Army headquarters. They're Colonel Jim Eckvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare, and Colonel Carmen Chickalese, the Chief for Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations. We talked in their office at the Pentagon.
Colonel Chickalese talked a little bit about the development of the workforce and his world of work. On the EW side, I think EW as a discipline was largely an outgrowth of the Iraq-Afghanistan period. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, certainly when it began, yes.
Yeah, okay. So how has your workforce developed? Are you seeing some of the same similar challenges as far as getting enough people with enough skills, or are you basically satisfying demand?
Well, no, it's exactly the same model. The model is we try to recruit as young as we can, and we try to grow that workforce through a series of successive jobs related to the field where you get more responsibility and your education becomes greater. And at the end of this career, you are really the expert at the job. From the EW perspective, we do not, at this point anyway, we don't bring new privates into the EW field. So they go to basic training, they go to their advanced individual training, they'll perform a job as an infantryman or a signalier or whatever they happen to choose as their career field, and then they will transfer into the branch at the sergeant level. And then he will do the types of jobs that are appropriate for a sergeant. So he'll work at the battalion level where he will have the benefit of seeing the staff sergeant at the higher level and maybe the sergeant first class at the next higher level, and he will learn from them so that eventually one day he'll be able to move into those positions and, you know, take up their responsibilities. And it's the same with the captains that we bring into the EW field. We don't bring lieutenants in at this point. We bring in the captains who begin their electronic warfare career watching how that major and that lieutenant colonel do their job, going to school, learning, getting opportunities to train. We do bring warrant officers in at the basic level, so a warrant officer one, when he completes his initial training, can go into the EW career field. And so that's kind of where we are. So just as Carmen was describing, we we bring them along, we educate them, we give them successively more difficult jobs, and then that's how we build that career force. And we're on a good path towards it. I think that now we have at least three full colonels who are electronic warfare professionals, so we certainly didn't have that when we started. So the career is moving forward. We are promoting individuals in the career field, and it is a career field where someone can be successful from the beginning until they retire many years later.
And this is maybe something that, you could export to the experience of cyber, but talk about how important it is in your view to have those more senior folks who've already gone through the pipeline so that they can be leaders and mentors in the field.
Yeah. I think it's probably because, and I think Carmen would agree with me, you go to school and what you typically get out of school is the things you should have known before you ever got there. And so we are a very experienced-based learning organization. So the way we learn the best in our Army, not that there's anything wrong with our schools are fantastic, but where we really get our education is being in the field and doing the job. Because the Army truly does not have a zero-defects mentality. You're going to learn some hard lessons along the way, and your leaders are going to help you to learn from those mistakes so that you can become a better leader in the future from them. So I think we have a very good learning in the field model where our more senior leaders are the ones that are doing the coaching and the mentoring and the teaching. And that's why it's so important to have those guys at those upper levels.
On the cyber side of the house, do you kind of yearn for something like that where you wish you had a few colonels that were that had gone through an extensive career cyber pipeline?
I think the short answer is sort of. And that sounds a little wishy-washy. The thing about it, actually, is we've been doing operations like this for some time. It's only now recently that we're calling it cyberspace operations.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got people who are colonels now that have been doing it for some time. But to your point, at the same time, we haven't necessarily had people that, again, grew up with fingers on the keyboards from the time they were 10. It might have been 18 or 20, and you're goofing off, and you go back to the some of us can remember the days of a floppy disk and a 286 computer, and it was still then a very different game and not interconnected. So you don't have that full breadth of a lifetime of experience yet, but frankly nobody does. So it's an even playing field in that regard. When it comes to recruiting people, the Army looks at a mixed approach to it. Is one is find people who already have that experience, that are already in the Army, that have a skill. And they have that innate skill, and they also have the mental acuity and maturity to handle that. And then we're also looking at new entries as well. The Chief of Staff of the Army, General Odierno, is very keen on giving officers, lieutenants, the opportunity to come right in. And again, the Army is working on that so that we can do that from the get-go. Also, some anecdotal experiences out there that sometimes, depending on the person's emotional maturity, they're not yet ready for the responsibility. And in the cyber arena, the training is quite grueling, and it's hard. And so you have to be dedicated. You might be a computer whiz, so to speak, but if you don't have the discipline to take care of yourself and make sure that you do all the work necessary, it's not a gimme.
And so, be a leader at some point, too.
And that's something else that we have to look at as a leader. And now as you become a leader, that becomes, of course, less time on the keyboard. And now are you still as technically adept in the latest techniques? Not necessarily. But again, you understand how it works and you understand how to bring it together.
That's Colonel Carmen Chickalis, the Chief for Cyberspace and Information Warfare Operations on the Army staff at the Pentagon. He's our guest, along with Colonel Jim Ekvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare, on this week's edition of On DoD. They'll join us for one more segment after another quick break. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Back on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. We're talking this week about the Army's point of view on how electronic warfare and cyberspace operations and the management of the electromagnetic spectrum all need to work together on this week's edition of the program. The official term for that within Army doctrine is CEMA, Cyber Electromagnetic Activities. Our guests are Colonel Jim Ekvall, the Chief for Electronic Warfare at Army Headquarters, and his partner for cyber there in the Pentagon, Colonel Carmen Chickalese.
So let's pivot to the new Army Cyber Center of Excellence, which you alluded to briefly, Colonel Ekvall. It's going to involve both of your disciplines, as I understand it, be the new home for both of those. I guess, first of all, we should explain what a center of excellence is, period, in the Army's construct, and then maybe we can talk a little bit more about what's going to happen at this particular one.
A center of excellence is an organization designated by the Army to be the force modernization proponent for a particular aspect of what we do in the Army. So we've got several of them. They really are the hub of all education, the hub of training, the hub of not necessarily the material development, but they're certainly the combat developers for what will eventually become material solutions if those are needed. So in essence, they become the centerpiece of a warfighting function. What that means is typically you would locate all of the leader training, development, and education at that particular spot. So not that this is a final decision yet, but at this point, the Army is certainly contemplating collecting all of the cyberspace-related field, so to speak, at the Cyber Center of Excellence. So we know they're going to develop a cyber school there. We believe that what will eventually happen over time was that the electronic warfare school will move to the Cyber Center of Excellence. They already, and for since they've been around, they've been doing the signal piece of it. So the electromagnetic spectrum management piece is there. So in essence, you have one location with a commanding general who is the force modernization proponent for, in this case, cyberspace. And I'll let Carmen take it from there.
Yeah, if it helps to visualize this at all, you know, we have armor and infantry formations. And we had the armor school at Fort Knox and the infantry school at Fort Benning, but frequently they operate together mixed on the battlefield. It's not armor pure or infantry pure, so the Army put them together, and now it's the maneuver center of excellence at Fort Benning. So a good chunk of the discussion has been about where does cyber and EW overlap. Well, sometimes they do, but what better thing to do than to bring them together at a center of excellence so you can learn from each other. I think it's also worth noting that at Fort Gordon, we're also going to be moving the Army Cyber Command there, and later on in the time period of probably fiscal year 17-18, the move will start. So we're looking at a move there, so Army Cyber will be there, the training will be there, the Army Cyber, Joint Force Headquarters Cyber, and NSA Georgia will all be located in shared facilities. So you've got an operational synergy with the training, the institutional Army there, to create better synergy and really be able to move tactics, techniques, and procedures operationally quickly into the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And is this basically at Fort Gordon at the Center of Excellence, is this where all Army cyber training effectively is going to take place? I mean, for example, is this where you're building your teams that you're going to contribute to Cyber Command for the national mission teams?
We're building, I think it's 22 of 41 teams will be at Fort Gordon, but the Intelligence Center of Excellence will still be running its courses out at Fort Huachuca, so that will remain there.
Gotcha.
So it's still kind of a university-like approach, but that's where, you know, the capabilities at Huachuca and the things that the intelligence community have to do are out there.
And Colonel Ekvall, where are we in the development of the Center of Excellence? I think it went initial operating capability sometime last year. What's going on there and what still needs to happen in order to get it fully up and running?
Yeah, in fact, they are in their initial operating capacity now. And in the beginning of fiscal year 16, they will reach their full operational capacity.
What are the gaps between here and there, I guess, is my question. What's happening at the center now and what ultimately will it perform that it's not doing yet?
I think their priorities are going to lie heavily on right now the organizational aspects, again, of the what's going to go into the tactical formations. We've got to get the doctrine right as well. The Center of Excellence is starting to work Field Manual 312 cyberspace operations. So that really help also define how the Army is going to do business, and that will lead to some of the other changes. And then a big piece as well is the acquisition. And, you know, the Department of Defense acquisition processes aren't meant to keep up or weren't developed to keep up with the speed of the Internet and the changes that occur there. So, you know, the Army's got to work with its other services and within the department to help change those acquisition processes so that we can, you know, build material and capability in a timely manner. And that's a real challenge.
Well, speaking of acquisition, let me just ask both of you, from the perspective of each one of your disciplines, what are the things that the capabilities, maybe it's not even a thing, maybe it's a service, maybe it's some broad capability that your field most needs right now that would be the biggest game changer? Can you think of a thing or two in each one of your fields? And maybe it's a new acquisition system.
I think we both agree with it. Not new acquisition system necessarily, but certainly an updated one. I'll go first. So years ago now, there was an analysis done in the Army that said, where are our gaps? If we truly need to gain and maintain an advantage in the spectrum, what gaps exist? And when you look at these gaps, what you look at is you look at it across .milpf, and I assume that most of your listeners will understand what that is, so I'll spare you the explanation, attempt to narrow those gaps or completely close them if it's possible using everything but a material solution. But material solutions are costly, as Carmen was just alluding to, sometimes slow to come by. Oftentimes, not all the time, we're either at pace with technology or behind technology, which is very, very concerning when you have fast-moving technology such as we just described. So the Army decided that we do need a material solution in order to close the gaps for electronic warfare, and so we've gone after material solutions. So we've used a combination here in the recent war was to provide quick reaction capabilities that gave commanders some capability to do electronic attack, electronic defense, and also always how well do we get information, which we call electronic warfare support, and then how do we protect our systems from fratricide or from the enemy's use of the spectrum, which we call electronic protect. We've done some quick reaction capabilities, but we also know that we need long-term programs of record that provide commanders with the material solutions. And so we're looking at this collectively as what we call the Integrated Electronic Warfare System, which we refer to as IEWS. It consists of three major parts. The first part is a planning tool that allows that electronic warfare professional to reach back to the sensors and the intel systems that are out there and show the commander what the electromagnetic environment looks like, both from a friendly perspective and an enemy perspective, and then show the commander, here are the assets that I can bring to bear so that you can gain maneuver freedom in the spectrum. So that's a planning and management tool. Highly needed by our electronic warfare professionals because at this point they really don't have that. Following on this electronic warfare planning and management tool is really a family of systems that conducts offensive electronic attack, mostly targeted towards the enemy's ability to conduct command and control. So we want to attack his systems that rely on the spectrum for the passing communication, but also those that use cyberspace. So we're looking at both of those aspects of it, and that'll come in a variety of platforms. The acquisition community at this time is looking at what is the best response to that gap, and they'll determine, because that's what they do, what material solution is best. And then eventually we've got to also look at the third piece of IEWH, which is our defensive electronic attack. And just very quickly, in essence, what that means is how do we provide protection to platforms and systems and soldiers from the enemy's use of weapons that use spectrum. And I'll give you a quick, very simplistic example. A proximity fuse is a fused projectile that uses the electromagnetic spectrum to sense when it gets close to the ground. And when it gets a certain height from the ground, it detonates. What I want to be able to do with a defensive electronic attack system is to cause that projectile to think it's closer to the ground than it actually is, so that it detonates prematurely on its trajectory long before it endangers anyone. And so there's just an example of what defensive electronic attack is. That's our material solutions that are in some aspects of the combat development or material development system.
Understood.
So in the cyber realm, because it's so new, there are many priorities.
Sure.
But I'd say the biggest priority, in my opinion, is having the ability to share situational awareness. The Internet's big. The DoD Information Network's DOTIN is pretty darn big. And you've got several headquarters out there, U.S. Cybercom, Army Cyber and the other services, the Joint Force Headquarters. DISA are all out there operating, maintaining a network, and being able to share that common operational picture, if you will, of what's going on in the DoDIN so that you can have an efficient response as well as efficient proactivity to handle the network. Because at the end of the day, the number one mission is operate and defend the network. And then from there, you look at other types of operations. So I think from an acquisition perspective, again, that shared situational awareness, in my opinion, is very important. And anything else of the information collators that help build to that.
Colonel Chickalees, Colonel Ekvall, thanks so much for doing this. It's been a really interesting hour. We covered a lot of ground. Thanks again.
Jared, thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks a lot. I appreciate the opportunity.
Colonel Carmen Chickalees is the Chief of Army Cyberspace and Information Operations, and Colonel Jim Ekvall is the Chief for Electronic Warfare, both of them within the Army's G357 headquarters staff at the Pentagon. That's it for this week's show. Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll be back with another round of On DoD next week on Wednesday at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm Jared Servio. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.